Hello and welcome, welcome, welcome to this edition of Side Retired, the MLB podcast. It is Dylan joined alongside Finley Walsh here in Georgetown, and we are happy to have a special guest with us this episode. We are joined by Jared Diamond of the Wall Street Journal. So, Mr. Diamond, Finley, how are you guys doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me here.
Finley, it's been a while we've heard from you. So how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Happy to be here and happy to contribute. So yeah.
Sounds great. Well, yes, we are still in an MLB lockdown, so there are no transactions or free agency to talk about, but there's still an abundance of baseball stories between players, negotiations, Hall of Fame, the Tampa Bay Rays, Fanatics, and a bunch of other topics. So Finley, how about you kick us off with your first question and we can get right into this.
Yeah. So as we sit around during this baseball lockdown, is there any progress on talks between the players and the owners? And what do you think needs to happen in order for baseball to resume?
Things are not going well as we sit here today. The lockout started right at the beginning of December. We're now rapidly approaching the end of January. And as of this moment, the two sides have only talked once. They talked last week. I don't know when this is airing, but it's Friday. They talked once last week. They didn't talk at all this week. They do have a meeting scheduled for Monday, which is January 24th. So that's good that we're starting to pick up the pace a little bit. But the reality is they went 43 days after the lockout without speaking at all about anything of consequence. That's a big problem considering spring training is supposed to start in 3 weeks, even a little bit less, three weeks or so. And look, I'm a pretty optimistic person. I want to believe cooler heads will prevail, but it's also hard to imagine spring training starting on time. I mean, you know how calendars work. It's easy to sort of start counting the days and go, how are they possibly going to make enough progress from nothing to have everybody in Florida and Arizona in just a few weeks? So things are not good right now. Hopefully that changes quickly, but it's been pretty disheartening just to see how little movement there's been over the last, 7 weeks or so.
And as we saw in 2020, when they were trying to figure out that sort of negotiation, definitely a little hostile, and they ended up agreeing to that 60-game season. Do you think we could potentially not see a full 162 games this year?
I'm not ready to make that prediction yet. That's a big cliff to drive over. Not starting spring training on time, that's one thing. You could start spring training a few weeks late and still play 162 games, right? You don't need spring training to be the 7-8 weeks or whatever it often is these days, 6 to 7 weeks. You could start a little bit late and still play 162 games. It's possible. So I'm not quite ready to go there, but look, every day that there's no deal brings us closer to that reality. And I think what's clear at this point in these negotiations is that the parties are entrenched and the players have a ton of solidarity and they seem ready to miss games if they think that will enable them to achieve their goals. They are ready for that nuclear option if they deem it necessary. And that hasn't always been the case in the baseball labor world, especially over the last, 25 years or so since the last work stoppage back in 1994 into 1995. So I hope they make a deal before games are missed. I still ultimately believe they will make a deal before games are missed, but I also didn't think this lockout would be quite as contentious as it's been. So I sort of am trying to stop making predictions.
And obviously, once the lockdown ends, there's still plenty of free agents available out there. So do you think teams like the Dodgers and the Yankees, who have been pretty inactive all year, earlier this offseason, will make their big splashes?
Yeah, it was pretty crazy, right? Before the lockout, there was this incredible mad dash among teams to sign free agents. It was historic, the amount of money that was spent so early in the offseason. We saw some enormous contracts. And like you said, the teams you usually associate with those kind of deals were nowhere to be seen. The Yankees did nothing. The Dodgers did nothing. A lot of sort of the big market teams kind of sat it out, which was surprising. Look, there's still at least one very, very big fish on the market in Carlos Correa. You would think the Yankees would be in on him. You start looking around the league and trying to pinpoint who might be in on someone like Carlos Correa, the team that a lot of people, including myself, sort of thought he was going to end up with was Detroit, who ended up pivoting and signing Javier Baez instead, which seems to take the Tigers out of the running for Carlos Correa. So who's really left to sign him? The Yankees clearly have a need. They have a hole in the middle infield. He would make the team much better. So if I'm a Yankee fan, I'm sitting here going, man, I hope they sign Carlos Correa. But there's another part of me that thinks, well, if they're going to sign him, why didn't they just do it already? There was clearly, they clearly had the opportunity to sign him before the lockout. They didn't. We'll see what they do when the lockout ends. But certainly there's a lot of interest among people in New York about whether the Yankees will sign Carlos Correa. And there's some other guys out there as well. You know, we still have Freddie Freeman available. There was a lot of surprise around the industry that he had not re-signed with Atlanta before the lockout. People still think he's going to re-sign with Atlanta. But again, the fact that they didn't sign him before the lockout makes you wonder if someone else like the Dodgers could swoop in and shock everybody. And there's some other, you know, guys out there as well, like Chris Bryant. So it's going to be very interesting. One thing we know when the lockout ends is there's going to be not a lot of time for a lot of free agents to try to find new homes. So that's going to be kind of fascinating to watch.
And then obviously as a New York based podcast, half of our audience was definitely excited by the first half of the offseason. As you can see the Mets poster next to me, the Max Scherzer edition, the Starling Marte edition, and all the other moves that the Mets have made so far. How would you assess, I guess, how the Mets have done? And then knowing Steve Cohen's sort of mindset, do you think they're done or could they still have another splash in this, I guess, offseason part two?
Yeah, obviously it's hard to have anything negative to say about what the Mets have done. You signed Max Scherzer to the largest contract ever by average value, and now you head into the season with Jacob deGrom and Max Scherzer going 1-2 in your rotation. They've had a great winter. They made some of the smaller moves to bolster their lineup, the Marcanas and the Eduardo Escobars and Starling Marte, guys of that nature. It helps the team dramatically. I still think the Mets need a little more starting pitching depth. So if I'm a Mets fan, I hope they're not done. Yes, you look at the rotation, you go, oh, they have Scherzer and they have DeGrom. What else could they need? Look, they lost Noah Syndergaard. Carlos Carrasco is still very much a question mark. Taijuan Walker was great in the first half last year, was a lot less great in the second half. So if I'm a Met fan, I'm hoping for a little more starting pitching depth. I'm not saying you need another ace. They need another ace. They don't, but someone that you feel like you could slide into the back of the rotation and that could give you innings in the case of injury, right? Jacob deGrom is coming off an injury that cost him most of a good chunk of last season, right? We haven't seen him in a long time. The guy was off to one of the greatest starts in baseball history. He was unable to finish that season. Max Scherzer, again, he's old, first of all. And let's not forget how Max Scherzer's season ended last year as well, when he was complaining of arm fatigue or whatever he was dealing with at the end of the season there. So I think another starting pitcher or even two that could reliably give them innings, could be protection for injuries, I think would really push the Mets over the edge, especially because they're in a very tough division, right? Atlanta just won the World Series. Philadelphia has a lot of talent that has been sort of unrealized in recent years. And Miami has had a really good offseason, has a lot of young talent as well. Sixto Sanchez is coming back. It's really a competitive division. So in order to sort of get over the top in it, you have to be quite aggressive.
And then switching gears a little bit, by the time this episode is released, I'm pretty sure the Hall of Fame announcement will be a couple days away. I'm pretty sure that is Tuesday of next week. I guess in general, are your thoughts on are you a pro steroid guy? Are you an anti-steroid guy? How would you assess the Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens situation? I guess Alex Rodriguez has joined the ballot as well this year. So it's a pretty controversial list of guys that are available this year.
Yeah, it's a pretty wild ballot. You know, I should preface everything I say here by just pointing out that I don't vote. I'm not eligible yet to vote, first of all. My first season at BBWAA was 2013. So if I'm not mistaken, this upcoming season will be my 10th. However, I'm also ineligible to vote by my company. The Wall Street Journal does not allow its reporters to participate in awards votes. We're not the only one. The same applies to the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, the Washington Post. Their writers do not take part in elections. So doesn't mean I don't have opinions about it. I do. And look, I would have voted for Bonds and Clemens. I would have voted for them every single time from the first time they were on the ballot. And that really applies to most players that have been sort of linked or accused of using performance enhancing drugs. I think there's a valid argument to be made that that there's a line to be drawn, you know, in 2005. Guys that were actually suspended under the joint drug agreement, if you want to treat them differently, you know, I understand that. I understand that rationale. The guys like an Alex Rodriguez, who was actually suspended for PED use, or Manny Ramirez, who was suspended twice for PED use during his career. I think that's a different case than the Bonds, the Clemenses, the Gary Sheffields, the Sammy Sosas, guys of that nature. First of all, they played in the era where PEDs were sort of tacitly allowed by Major League Baseball, right? If you're not testing for PEDs, if you're not penalizing players for using PEDs, to me, that's essentially allowing players to use them. Second of all, like, I'm a little bit older than you guys, but not too much older. I'm about 10 years older than you. I was 10 years old in 1998 when Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa captivated everybody with their home run chase. When I was growing up loving baseball, PEDs were everywhere. They were just part of the game. Every great player, or so many great players that I grew up with, that guys that were just my childhood, were PED users, or were probably PED users, or played against a zillion PED users. So to essentially cut all of those guys out of the Hall of Fame, for me and many people that sort of grew up in the 90s and into the early 2000s, into the mid 2000s, you're basically saying, well, your childhood's irrelevant. The baseball that you grew up with is fraudulent, that it didn't exist. I don't see it that way. PEDs were a part of the game, a huge part of the game back then. There's nothing wrong with acknowledging that and sort of embracing that reality. I'm not saying we ignore the fact that there was PEDs in baseball for a very, very long time. There still are PEDs in baseball, but a lot more back then. But that doesn't take away from the fact that what Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa did in 1998 was one of the most fond memories I have of watching baseball as a child. Barry Bonds is the greatest baseball player I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, these guys did what they did. And I don't think keeping them out of the Hall of Fame is sort of the right way to address the fact that there was systemic drug use around Major League Baseball for a long time when I was in that era.
So do you think anyone gets elected this year, or will we have nobody reach the 75% necessary to get in?
It's a good question. I was talking just a few days ago with Ryan Thibodeau, who runs the Hall of Fame Tracker website and collects all the ballots online. Anyone who follows Baseball Fan follows him at this point. He told me going into the election cycle that he thought nobody was going to get in. He expected David Ortiz to end up in that sort of 65% range. But now, as we sit here a few days away from the ballots coming out, he now says he does think Ortiz at least has a chance to get in. He told me that he sees Ortiz now finishing somewhere between 70 and 80%, which means he is going to be either very closely kept out or just get in by the skin of his teeth. And I think that was a bit of a surprise to me too. I thought no one would get in this year. Ortiz has been polling better than I think I expected, especially given the fact that he allegedly failed a PED test in 2003. I think Rob Manfred sort of coming out a few years ago and supporting David Ortiz publicly helped his case. I also think David Ortiz's personality has helped too, right? He's so likable, was so beloved. And, you know, we could say that that shouldn't be a factor, and we could argue about whether it should be a factor or not. I just think it is one realistically in this election. And I think there's a chance Ortiz gets in, and if he doesn't get in, he'll get in next year. He's the only one, though. No one else has any chance.
Sounds good. And Bonds and Clemens are also on their last year of eligibility. Ortiz is on his first. So a big difference between those two guys in their last year versus Ortiz, who is several years if he fails to make it this year. A-Rod, I believe, is also in his first year. So that's going to be an interesting case to watch over the next upcoming years. Another interesting story that did come out, I believe it was, when we're recording, it was yesterday, probably a couple of days ago, was that the Tampa Bay Rays Montreal rumor split season, that idea apparently has been squashed and that will not be happening. The Rays will now have to explore full-time in Tampa. I'm pretty sure their stadium lease is through 2027, I believe. I might be incorrect on that, but I'm pretty sure that's the date. So what are your thoughts on the whole, could a split season work? Could the Tampa Bay Rays stuck in Tampa? What's that situation, I guess?
Yeah, look, let's be honest. The split season sister city plan was not feasible. It seemed like the Rays were the last people on earth to know that it wasn't feasible. You know, it got a lot of mocking, and I understand why, because it sounded so silly. But come on, let's not pretend that you wouldn't have wanted to see that. It would have been hilarious. It would have been absurd, and it's a terrible idea, objectively. I don't care that Stuart Sternberg, the Rays owner, is out there saying, well, this is the future of professional sports. Maybe I'll be proven wrong, but Mr. Sternberg, I don't see it personally. It would have been a wild idea, but it's not happening. So they have to move on. And yeah, look, they're on record of saying just a few months ago that they do not consider the Tampa Bay area to be feasible for a full-time team. Now, maybe they were just saying that in order to generate support for their sister city plan. Now that that is deteriorated, they don't really have many other options, right? They have two choices. Well, there's three choices. Choice one, and the most sort of likely choice, is that they finally figure out a way to build a stadium in Tampa and try to make it work in Tampa. Look, I'm very familiar with the Tampa Bay area. My wife, she grew up in Tampa. Much of her family still lives in Tampa. I spend a lot of time in Tampa. The Rays don't play in Tampa. The Rays play in St. Petersburg, in the middle of nowhere, in a horribly located stadium. Now, am I saying that a baseball stadium built in a good location in Tampa would work? I don't know. I don't know if it would work. It's impossible for me to know. But what I do know is that Tampa has supported a hockey team incredibly well, right? Both on the ice and in the community. So if you could support hockey in Tampa, why not baseball? I think it's a valid point to be made. So that's their first choice. They have to figure out a way to get it done. He could relocate the team after 2027 when their lease, the Tropicana Field, expires. There's no possible way they're going to go back to Tropicana Field. That ship has sailed. It's been a complete disaster. Or he could sell the team. And Stuart Sternberg says he's not interested in selling the team. Who knows what would happen if that were to change, if someone were to make him an offer. And if he were to sell the team, then it becomes, is someone selling the team is someone buying the team to move the team? Is someone buying a team to keep it in Tampa? Those are the choices. Major League Baseball, the other 29 owners, they don't want the Rays to move. They want the Rays to stay in Tampa. The reason for that is that if the Rays move, you are taking a city off the board that could be used as potential expansion. And this same logic applies to the Oakland A's. We know they're flirting with Las Vegas if their stadium situation in Oakland doesn't work out. The owners don't want the A's to move to Las Vegas. The owners want the A's to stay in Oakland so they could charge some new owner $1 zillion in expansion fee to move to start a team in Las Vegas in the future, because we know that baseball wants to expand to 32 teams. Rob Manfred has said that publicly many times. Once the Oakland and Tampa Bay situations work out, the goal is to move to 32 teams. Well, guess what? Las Vegas is a great option for an expansion team. Nashville, Tennessee, or Montreal is a great option for an expansion team. So if Tampa Bay were to go to one of those places, you're taking it off the board for some very wealthy person to spend $2 billion on an expansion team that gets dispersed to the other owners. which is why I think ultimately they're going to try to make it work in Tampa. Hopefully they can. I believe the city of Tampa has, you know, come up with some creative proposals to try to help finance a stadium. So we'll see what happens. It really is a shame that a team that's been as successful on the field as the Rays has been as much of a disaster off the field. And I hope that it works out because I think it's a great community. And I do think under the right circumstance, it's conceivable that they could support a baseball team full time.
So in theory, could we see an expansion during the current player owner negotiations and see that potential move from 30 teams to 32 teams? Guesses to any expansion cities?
Yeah, that's not happening anytime soon. They want it to happen, but it will not. Nothing's going to happen with expansion until after Tampa Bay and Oakland situations have been worked out, which means either they build new stadiums in those markets or they move. That is going to be when you'll see baseball expand or look to expand. That's something Rob Manfred has said for a few years, that no expansion will be on the table until after the Rays and A's are sort of settled either with new stadiums or have relocated. Now, Las Vegas is the number one expansion market for baseball. That's undoubtedly true. There's a football team there now. There's a hockey team there now. Every sport wants to be in Las Vegas. Every sport is getting into gambling more and more. I would be absolutely stunned if there is no baseball team in Las Vegas in the next 10 years. I'd be absolutely shocked, or, you know, 15 years, whatever it is. Another market, if I had to pick the other market for an expansion team, it's Nashville, Tennessee. Everyone likes to say Montreal. I think Nashville's a better choice for baseball. I think it's more likely. I think they want to expand their map in the southeastern United States, right? There's baseball is the only major sport that has no team in North Carolina and no team in Tennessee. You know, baseball is a big hole on its map between Washington and Atlanta, which means a place like Nashville makes a lot of sense. We'll see, but this is still real relatively far in the future.
Sounds good. And then the last topic we had on our little show sheet is that you recently wrote an article about Topps and Fanatics. And I guess in general, Fanatics recently bought the Topps company after, I believe it was earlier in the year, they got the rights to sell baseball cards. So now that they own Topps, will we still be getting Topps cards in 2022, or is it now going to be Fanatics branded cards or anything like that?
Fanatics bought Topps, and now Fanatics could start producing baseball cards under the Topps label immediately. You know, Fanatics' deal to start producing baseball cards actually didn't start until I think 2026. But by acquiring Topps, that changes things, right? Because now they own the company that already had the license to produce baseball cards. So Topps cards will continue with the branding. Everything about the Topps cards that you know and love will continue, except now instead of being a privately held company called the Topps Company, it's going to be sort of a subsidiary of Fanatics. What that means for the fan, the collector, the hobbyist, we don't know yet. We will see. We do know that Fanatics is going to be sort of the one-stop shop for cards moving forward. They have deals with the NBA, and they're going to have, you know, they're going to be making football cards. Basically, Fanatics is the future of baseball card of sports cards. Whether that's good or bad, I don't know. I guess we'll find out. But Fanatics clearly thinks that there's a lot of money to be made in that realm.
Sounds good. Well, Finley, unless you have anything else to add.
I think we're all good. Yeah.
Sounds great. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate you hopping on, talking baseball with us. It's been a pleasure to have you on, Mr. Diamond.
Anytime, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Finley and I will be back in a couple of moments, but thank you so much, Mr. Diamond, for stopping by.
Thanks so much. Be well, guys.
All right. Well, Finley and I are now back. We appreciate Mr. Diamond for coming on and talking to us. Finley, that was a great interview.
Yeah, that was awesome. He had a lot of very interesting things to say, so it was great to be on.
And obviously, for most of you, this is Finley's. Actually, we did say you haven't heard him in a while. You actually have never heard Finley because late last night at 2 a.m., yep, 2 a.m., I got a call from our good buddy James that said, "Hey, Dylan, I can't make it to our interview today, but the show must go on." So I knocked on Finley's dorm room door and said, "Hey, Finley, you want to be a sub today?" And Finley was gracious enough to sign up literally 4 hours before our interview and log on and be a unofficial official co-host of Side Retired for the day. So Finley, thank you so much for stopping by as well.
Yeah, it was really fun. And thank you for having me on. I'm willing to do it anytime you need me. So yeah.
Sounds cool. Good. Well, you are literally on this side of the wall. So I can just start banging and you will hear it. So thank you so much. In the future, we have a lot of upcoming fun events. Depending on the chronology of when we release the episodes, there's either going to be a Side Retired Sunday morning trivia episode that'll be on YouTube exclusively, that either will be released the day after this episode is released or the day before. We're still debating if this is coming out Saturday morning or Monday morning, but you will see it on your Apple Podcast, on the YouTube, Google Podcast, on the website sideretiredpod.com, as well as the Twitter page at sideretiredpod. And we recently announced an Instagram page, so go follow that. We have a lot of nice new guys helping us out in a bunch of different areas of Side Retired. You'll be able to meet a lot of them when the Side Retired Trivia Teams episode comes out, as well as we have a couple other fun interviews lined up for the future. So future is bright at Side Retired, Finley, and it is future's fun bright to have you a part of it. So unless you have anything else to add, go Mets. Finley's from LA right now, so the technically Dodgers. He's a Dodgers. Ugh. All right, I won't displease that much. Ugh. Whatever. All right. Well, I guess with that, Finley's about to hear our corny little ending of this episode, but the side is indeed retired.